Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and joining me as ever is Mr. Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, that was a very intense introduction.
Was it intense? Why? It's probably the heat.
It felt a bit like we were spies or something like that, I can imagine it.
Spies broadcasting our podcast from behind
enemy lines. Bad spies.
Bad spies.
In code. It's all in code. It may sound like we're talking about films in an incoherent manner, but what we are doing is
giving away secrets of the enemies in a coherent manner.
Yeah, but we're based in Britain, so we will be Russian spies.
We're traitors.
I don't want to be Russian.
We're traitors.
I don't want to be Russian.
Well, you don't have to be Russian if you don't want to be.
What can I be?
You can be an Israeli spy if you like.
Oh, I don't want to be Israeli.
Okay, German. American.
Can I just be someone in one of the neutral countries?
A Swiss spy.
Oh, Swiss is too boring. Danish.
Danish spy.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good show, actually.
The Danish spy.
Yeah.
Talking about bacon techniques and stuff like that.
No, they're trying to withhold their bacon technique information from other countries.
They're trying to steal the British bacon techniques.
Don't think they need them today. Is our bacon any good?
Not as good as the Danish. Do we still import Danish bacon?
Yes, I've seen it in supermarkets.
I've never done a taste test between British and Danish.
Well, that's something for this afternoon, maybe.
Well, a lot of ham is watered down as it is water.
Yeah, they water inject meat generally to make it look plumper. They do it to a lot of chicken.
I'm going to start doing that to myself.
Yeah, water inject yourself. I don't know, that's probably really dangerous. Injecting water into your bloodstream.
I want to see the pre-water injected meat to see how, what if it's only like a tiny cube.
Well, not to get into it too much instead of films, but they also tumble dry chicken in enzymes so that they're partially digested before it's cooked. So that no matter what you do to it, you could be a complete idiot as a cook, it'd still be tender. Because it's already been digested. So cheap chicken is... that's why it's always quite soft. Tumble dried in digestive juices.
Someone needs to make a film about this.
Yeah.
Rather than superhero shit all the time.
Well, more on that later. So this isn't about the foul state of our meat industry. This is about films. And we should mention before we start that we are sponsored by Her Film Project, who are an organisation that help promote diversity in film. So if you have any interest in such things, then please go to herfilmproject.com and follow at herfilmproject on Twitter.
Is it diversity in subject matter, so they could do the meat industry?
Is that a diverse subject? Well, you're just saying anything that isn't superheroes is diverse now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's become... I would say that's become so normal, it's pretty easy to... Everyone's diverse.
Sure.
If you're not in a superhero film... Or Fast and Furious is diverse.
Well, they're basically superheroes in cars, aren't they? If you've seen... I mean, I've only seen one Fast and Furious film, but they are doing superhuman things. It's not sort of realistic driving films anymore. So it's basically like the old 80s cartoon Mask, Fast and Furious.
Just a little bit after my time.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Anyway, I went to the cinema.
What did you see, Marek?
I saw My Life as a Courgette.
Right.
Our American audiences and some other audiences would know it as My Life as a
Zucchini?
Yeah. Where do you stand on that?
right in the middle. No.
Zucchini.
I mean, they have other words. I'm fine with other countries having other words.
That's probably the most
weird one.
Drastic change in a word from courgette to zucchini.
Zucchini. I mean, it's just what the Jawas say in Star Wars. So I don't know.
Do they?
Yeah.
I think I like courgette really.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about food.
Maybe the word zucchini is more fun for kids, so they're more likely to eat them.
I think they would rather go and see My Life as a Zucchini as My Life as a Courgette.
Yeah.
And I thought this was about a kid who was half vegetable. Not in a demeaning insult way.
He was a vegetable from the waist down.
Yeah.
That's even worse, isn't it?
Well, no, but I thought he's got nothing to do. His name is Courgette.
Oh.
So let me explain what this is. It is a stop motion animation, which is 66 minutes long.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I went to cinema thinking, well, they'll definitely put some money off this. No. Still £8.50 with a membership card in during the day. It's a disgrace, the prices. Mm. They really are. Anyway, it's a story of Courgette, the original title is Ma Vie de Courgette. Can you say it better than that?
Ma Vie de Courgette.
Ma Vie de Courgette. Oh, oui, oui.
My French accent's terrible.
You need to have a couple of in-words. What do they call the words you say before you get in?
In-words.
In-words?
Sure.
You know, the words you do before when you're doing a dialect?
Yeah.
You might say a word like bustard. You get your bustard. If you're going to Yorkshire, might say that.
That's how I start the day in the morning.
Just say that, bustard.
Just wake up and go, bustard. Otherwise, I'm French all day.
What are Frenchies do? Alors, they say, isn't it? I don't. Anyway, I'm really going off piste.
It's all right. It's hot, isn't it?
We're not meant for this.
We're really not. We're supposed to be walking around fjords in the freezing cold, but feeling quite comfortable, thanks.
Shooting pigs with our dicks.
Well, with our dicks? That's what we call guns in Norway.
Anyway, so what happens is, back to Courgette, who is a boy living in a house in Switzerland or France, and sort of that, you know, one of those areas. And his mum is an alcoholic. We don't see his mum. And then she dies, and he has to go and live in an orphanage. And that's his story about how he gets on with the other people in the orphanage and how their sort of backstories. But it's not too... That sounds quite bleak. It's a foster home rather than an orphanage. It's quite a... It's odd mix of that... Now, the actual storyline, plot line is that quite bleak, and what happens to the kids while they're in there is quite bleak, but this thing is quite sort of kiddish and sort of fun. It's sort of an animation with meaning, ones that adults could enjoy as well. I had that feeling with it. I thought it's good, you know. I have this lately where you think everything is all really really good, but it didn't blow me away. But stop motion is amazing. This was nominated for an Oscar for the best animated film. I don't know if Kubo and the Two Strings won or not, but it's up there. I mean, the animation is incredible and the characterisation is really really great. I just thought it was a good enjoyable film. But I think my key point is, should you be paying full price for a 66 minute film?
Well, no, not really. I mean,
I thought 80 minutes was the feature length minimum sort of thing. Really.
I don't know who would regulate that. I mean, what did it feel like watching a 60 odd minute thing? Did it feel like it ended prematurely, or was it right for its own story?
Well, I was actually really... I think it was good. I was really pleased to go in and go, because I, by some miracle, I had been quite busy with work, so I thought, oh great, I can't afford to sit around for 3 hours watching some with trailers for a 4 hour spectacular.
Yeah.
And so it was pleasing for six. I didn't feel unfulfilled.
Right.
I just felt that it should be reflected in the price. Because clearly they can put more films on. If it's 66 minutes long, they can probably get another slot out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Although I'm just thinking about other alternatives, like with theatre, it can be as long as they damn well please, can't it? I mean, you can you can pay the same price for something that's 4 hours long as something that's 1 hour long. It's not, you're just, you know, you're still wearing their seats down, aren't you? And spitting on their floor.
Yeah.
Their overheads to clean that up is the same.
What I really loved about this was the people, obviously, there's been, I watched the English dub version.
Right.
So they got, they had actors. And who's that bloke? Ron Offerman? What's his name? Offerman.
Oh, Nick Offerman. Who plays Ron Swanson.
Yeah, he played the police officer who was in charge.
He's got a great voice for animation.
And he was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
And he really added to this sort of slow... Is he Canadian or not? Is he?
I'm not sure. He's got a Canadian feel to him.
Yeah.
And he may be Alaskan, I don't know.
He had the sort of feel of making it sort of... His voice was perfect for the police. And a lot of the time they get their voiceovers who are awful.
Just the most famous.
Yeah.
He's from Illinois, Nick Offerman.
Oh, okay. So Idris Elba, for example, was in the one about the...
Zootropolis.
He was awful.
Yeah.
Whereas Nick Offerman did an absolutely brilliant job and fitted. Considering he was dubbed... He wasn't an original cast member.
Well,
he was a perfect casting for.
Cast your mind back to in the days of yore when we played the casting game with a live action Winnie the Pooh film, and I cast Nick Offerman as Eeyore, and you said it was a terrible choice, and you don't know who he is.
And I look back at myself and say, what an absolute dickhead. Well, I can still do that today.
Sure.
But I can do it knowing that I definitely was an absolute dickhead.
Well, I think that...
You must have...
I was furious. I mean, I just had to bite my tongue, which is why I had to have all that tongue surgery.
Ignorance.
Well, you just have to move on and just go, well, some people are cunts and there's nothing you can do about
it. Whoa! And that is the explicit...
that's why we put it on every episode, just in case.
Explicit tag that comes... out on that one. Yeah, so I just think it was it's enjoyable animation. It's quite odd when it's animation because you can't really talk about the actors and the voiceovers really. Yeah. And so yeah, animation's great and I enjoyed it. It didn't really feel, it felt as though it was sat between two things. So it wasn't, you know, like the storyline was quite gritty.
It sounds quite mundane for an animation. I mean, does it sort of break from a reality you could just film?
No, it's a real sort of reality. Sort of, you could do this as a film, a 66-minute film with the cast.
Does that bring something interesting to it, or is that just a bit odd?
I think that the animation, they could have used it as a film. It could have been a film, and maybe I think would have been better as a film.
Okay,
because people with some of the more difficult moments, the human animation can only be so expressive, especially stop motion stuff. So it does rely on the voiceovers being good.
Well, you sort of endowing the fact that they're just sort of sat there looking and then they blink.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all they can do.
Yeah, so I think maybe it would have worked better as a film than animation, but I mean, it must have taken them bloody ages.
Yeah. Yeah, but they got an Oscar nomination.
I give it 7 or 8 Mariks, and I think it's a perfect viewing. For in about 2 years' time, when it comes out for a Sunday evening, when you don't want a massive long film and you want something that's quite pleasing, but not over. I think I'd give it 8 because the animation, the stop motion is really, really great. But I didn't feel the story was overly emotional. I didn't really learn. It may be because it's aimed at kids and it wants to. It's a gentle way to show them the horrors of humanity.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
There you go. That's my life as a zucchini or courgette, depending on where you live. Now I think it's time for this. Here is an email from Daniel Davis about lists, and he says, "Hello, David Marek and Buddy. Screw your neighbour dog! What is your favourite film in which a musical number breaks out without it being a musical or following the lives of musicians who, let's be honest, would be singing and dancing and all that jazz anyways? Here are a few examples that I love. Ferris Bueller lip-syncing, but hell, I like to think in the film it's meant to be his voice because he can do anything on his day off. In Magnolia, the cast all singing Amy Mann is so melancholy. And obviously the classic tiny dancer scene in Almost Famous is a fantastic moment. I know these are musicians, but they're not on stage, and damn, I just really, really want to have this film on the list. IMDb score 25. Life is Beautiful did me in. Glaswegian accent. I'm not Scottish, but just thought it would be fun. Too late, it's at the end of the email. Keep watching the films. So that's... Thank you for that, Daniel. Films where people spontaneously break into song. I mean, the ones that spring to mind instantly... there is the moment in Anchorman when everybody does Skyrockets in Flight that everyone's copied since as a sort of comedy bit. Have you seen 40-Year-Old Virgin?
I think I've seen the whole thing. I've seen bits of it.
It's a really good one of those films, you know, from that era of that, whatever they were called. That group of actors who are in everyone's things, you know, in each other's films. Actually, Zatoichi. There's a
Zato what?
Zatoichi, which is about
another word for courgette.
That's right. It's about a blind samurai, starring Beat Takashi. Spoilers, but it's got a musical dance number at the end, which is totally unexpected.
Oh, really?
That is not the tone it's had all the way through.
Yeah.
It can be really sort of fun and elevate you into the end of it. Or it can be a bit jarring, but can you think of any that...
One of my favourite moments, and it's only a little bit of a... is a French film called Heartbreaker, which stars Vanessa Paradis. And it's about... I really enjoyed this film. It's about this bloke who's a professional, sort of good-looking guy, and he's got business to... He gets paid to break up people's relationships.
Right.
And he's hired by this rich bloke to break at the wedding of his daughter, I think, from Vanessa Paradis or something. And he says he likes this really cheesy song playing on the radio, and she doesn't like it, you know, because she thinks he's a dick. But she can't contain her loving of the song. So she turns out the car window and just mimes, lip syncs to the song. Absolutely brilliant moment, you know. A moment you think, that was amazing, just really original, a way of showing someone not somewhere couldn't. So I always remember that as one of my favourite. I don't know if it's answering the question, but that's a really nice film to watch if you're looking for something a bit light. Heartbreaker is. I really enjoyed that.
I'm remembering the one memorable scene in My Best Friend's Wedding as well, which I've not seen since it was first out. I can't even vouch for it being any good. I can't remember. But where at the wedding they all break into whatever that song is called. Forever and ever will stay in my heart and I will love you. Whatever it's called. It's the only bit that stuck with me, really, from that film.
Yeah.
Rupert Everett being the gay best friend.
I don't know, I watched it all.
No, it was in that Cameron Diaz era when she was in everything.
Until her face stopped moving properly.
Is that right? Strokes.
Wow. Here's an email.
Oh, good.
Tom Hatch has written in.
What's he want?
Subject: Jim Carrey, 1995, too ridiculous. Dear Fandango friends, but not that arsehole dog, not a friend.
He's everyone's favourite character now. Everyone loves a villain.
Yeah. I'm writing about Jim Carrey, and more broadly, actors have had amazing hot streaks, it's quite relevant, that could never keep going forever. If you take a look at Jim Carrey's filmography, he breaks through in 1994 with Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Follows that with The Mask and Dumb and Dumber in the same year. 1995 sees him in Batman Forever, Ace Ventura 2, duff but huge box office films. Then 1996, Cable Guy, Lie Lie 97, Truman Show 98, 99, Man on the Moon. Things start to ease off after then with Me, Myself and Irene, and then more patchy output. But you know that guy couldn't keep a run like that going on forever. I know he's not for everyone, but that hit rate surely deserves respect. Can you think of any other actors that had a run like that that could never go on forever? I'm sure they're lows. Tom Cruise in the 80s brings to mind. Michael Douglas too, that's a good one. Also Harrison Ford. Think of Harrison Ford, but I mean, mind the film Witness. It's a classic that I'd completely forgotten about. Sorry.
Brilliant.
If one of you two hasn't seen it, I'd be a great after the letter section film for the podcast. That's his mistake, not my grammatical mistake. If you've both seen it, that's a good one. Thanks for reading my letter. Blah, 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 blah. And all for the film chat recommendations. Cheers, Tom Hatcher.
Yes, I mean, Jim Carrey did have an incredible run. I mean, and I agree, Me, Myself and Irene's where it starts to waver, although we should mention in 2004, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
That's a brilliant film, and that's a complete change of direction.
Yeah, and arguably his last good film. Kick-Ass 2, Anchorman 2, I mean, Dumb and Dumber 2, he just starts being in a lot of
I think he was so
sequels.
When someone's so distinct,
yeah,
and so refreshing, inevitably, whether you like him or not, he was one off, you know, doing
yeah,
that
yeah.
He sort of where it gets worn out. I mean, Jack Black is a similar one where sometimes you think, oh, I can't
stomach him these days.
Yeah, you remember he's doing his thing, you know, I can't face Jack Black doing that thing. I mean, School of Rock is perfect for Jack Black.
Yes.
And
he's perfect in it, isn't he? Yeah. It's weird, that one, isn't it? Because he's found very few other films where he quite fits the part. I found him just tedious in Tropic Thunder. I didn't really enjoy him in King Kong. Shallow Hal's terrible. But yeah, I'm trying to think of other people who've had a run like that, who just come out of nowhere and then boom. But no, off the top of my head, Cameron Diaz, you know, she was just in The Mask and then in everything. Jim Carrey, of course, in The Mask as well.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could say that Ryan Gosling's in the middle of that now,
He started so young, you know, started in the Mickey Mouse Club or whatever it was called, and has been working ever since, you know.
Yeah.
He suddenly broke it into the big leagues, didn't he?
I think it's difficult for comedians because, I mean, Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Such good output in the early
when
days.
When it was Beverly Hills Cop, Trading Places,
yeah.
And then
Coming to America.
And then the Golden Child started to go downhill. Maybe it was quiet. And then he came back with both. I think someone said before, came back with Bowfinger.
And Dreamgirls, and then disappeared up his own bottom again with.
But I watched Beverly Hills
and Dave.
Beverly Hills Cop the other day.
It's great, isn't it?
He's
so watchable.
But he's absolutely brilliant in it.
Yeah. He's fantastic. Because he seems almost more comfortable in his own skin than in Trading Places, in fact. You know, where Trading Places, he's doing his shtick. Whereas in Beverly Hills Cop, he just seems sort of like a dude.
Just a great film.
Yeah, fantastic. Cop. Have you seen Witness, going back to the second
one? Is that the one with the Amish boy, is it?
An Amish boy witnesses a murder, and
yes.
Harrison Ford has to protect him because it turns out to be a politically motivated murder, and so there's some rather powerful people behind it.
Yeah,
and he ends up taking him back to the Amish community in order to protect him.
I saw it about 20 years ago. I've not seen it.
I've seen it a few times. It's absolutely brilliant. It's one of those that isn't celebrated as much as other Harrison Ford films.
The boy looks exactly like Fireball the Mouse in America Goes.
I think.
Is it based on his face or something?
Possibly, because I think the boy grew up to be in other films. Yes, it was Lucas Haas.
If you look at his face.
Who is in Mars Attacks, Inception, The Revenant. It's that guy.
And was he the mouse in Fireball Goes West or something? Because I remember seeing him and getting actually confused between a human being's face. Look him up, Witness, and look up Fireball.
Yeah, what was
the
what was the year of Fireball Goes West?
How many were those Fireball films? American Terrier, Fireball Goes West. I mean, maybe it's my imagination, but it definitely looks the same as that mouse.
Well, mate, I think it might be your imagination.
No, they based that mouse on his face.
I mean, sure.
Someone find out if this is true.
Okay, Lucas Haas. Did I say Lucas? Is that right? I actually wrote an essay about Witness.
I wish you'd said Fireball Goes West.
About Fireball Goes West. No, about the murder scene in Witness when I was at school, when we were having to analyse film and do all of this stuff. I don't know what course it was for. Chemistry? Probably chemistry. On-screen chemistry. Mild police work. Double mild police work on Wednesday afternoons. So I analysed every shot, I remember, and said why this works and why they're doing that and why that happens. And blah, blah, blah.
Did you get an A?
I did.
David, come to the front of the class.
Thank you.
What an A.
Thank you.
Now remove your pants and trousers.
And never watch 18 films again.
Oh, sorry.
I should watch Witness again.
It's great. It is really good. Have we got any more letters?
Yeah, do you want to read
another
one?
Read another one.
This, I'm going to get this letter, although we're recording June, we're up to the 25th of May. I'm trying to keep track for listeners who get cross there.
It's a lot of... We seem to attract cross people, don't we? Have you noticed
that? There's that one man, but if people who think that we don't read the letters out, what happens is we ask for letters, we get a burst of letters,
yeah,
and then we read those out, and then we get none at all.
Yeah. So if you could coordinate amongst yourselves, you know,
you
at one of your
people,
at one of your regular meetings that you all have, if you decide who's going to write in this week, it would make our lives a lot easier. This is from Ben Raphael. Good name.
Nice name.
Subject: Netflix. Dear David Marek and Dogs, good and bad, regarding your Netflix episode, I thought I'd write in about my own favourite discovery, Harold and Maude. I'm sure you've mentioned it before, possibly back in the Absolute days. I was absolutely blown away by this. Besides fantastic cinematography and a lovely Cat Yusuf Islam Stevens soundtrack, the film has at its heart an intergenerational love story that manages to be sweet, sincere, and ultimately believable. Depressed rich kid Harold, hobbies, attending the funerals of strangers and staging elaborate mock suicides to shock his unimpressed mother, finds friendship and ultimately love with Maude, a similarly morbid artist four times his age. Despite the film's darkly comic tone, the central romance is neither rushed nor played for cheap gross-out laughs, allowing the couple's relationship to develop slowly and organically. Compare this to a more contemporary rom-com such as Yes Man, where Jim Carrey has a hilarious sexual encounter with a woman 20 years his senior, gross, before settling down with Zooey Deschanel, an apparently appropriate 18 years his junior. Woo, age, sexism. Despite an occasionally overplayed sense of whimsy, Harold converting his Jaguar coupe into a hearse, for example, and an ending you can sort of see coming, the film succeeds in being both sweet, subtle, uplifting, and very, very funny. It's hard to imagine many contemporary films, including touches such as Maude's concentration camp inmate tattoo, without comment or explanation. Presumably a prequel of Maude's early life is in the works as we speak. I'd be grateful if you could recommend any other Hal Ashbury films to check out. I watched Being There a couple of years ago and was equally enthralled. Thanks for the podcast. Best of luck with the ongoing Wolfsball season.
Yes.
And keep watching the films. Ben, have you seen Harold and Maude?
Yes.
Fantastic film.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Brilliant film. I thought, and in fact, it almost relevant to the stuff we've been talking about, because it is mentioned by Cameron Diaz in Something About Mary as the love story for our time. But it's just got a very, very smart angle on a pretty tried and tested formula. The idea that young people are obsessed with death because they haven't been around long enough to see anything grow, because growing things takes longer. And it's just like, yeah, spot on, that's lovely. But it's a brilliant story at the heart of it.
A really nice feel to it. And being there's Peter Sellers' last film before he died.
That's right.
Where he played a gardener who's a bit... who might be Jesus or something, I think.
All right, well, I watched a film this week as well, Marek.
Oh, right, what one?
Well, I caught up with one because people said it was quite funny. It had become available on streaming services and I was sitting in. So I watched the Lego Batman film.
The first one is very good.
You like the Lego movie?
Yeah, that is one superhero. Well, it's really one film that I was pleasantly...
Yes.
It was one of the best surprises of a couple of years ago, was it?
Yeah, it was excellent. 14? It was excellent. In fact, the writer-director duo of the Lego movie have recently been fired off the Han Solo movie for creative differences. So they were going to be doing that, and now they are not doing that. That news dropped this morning.
A young Han Solo movie. Yeah, who's playing him?
Just some douche who doesn't look like Han Solo.
The same bloke, what's his name, who played the young Harrison...
Chris Pratt, no.
No, the young Indiana Jones, what's his name?
What, River Phoenix? The corpse of River Phoenix?
No, the other guy who played his sort of son.
Oh, Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
Who played Mutt. Mutt Jones.
Yeah.
No, it's not him. Anyway, so the Batman, the Lego Batman movie takes Will Arnett's Batman from the Lego movie and gives him his own film entirely in the Lego universe again. Now, the Lego movie, I thought, had really fun bits. I wasn't completely sold on it. I loved the final act. You know, when it breaks its boundaries and just goes, oh, that's lovely. This is now a really nice kids' film. I really like this. Lego Batman isn't as adventurous, although it's got some really fun things. So it's actually possibly my favourite version of Batman as a character from any of the films, because they never quite make Batman that interesting, I don't
think.
How
did they... I'm sorry to be boring. Do you know how they managed to clear the whole Batman
rights? The way they've done it is Lego have licensed a load of intellectual properties that they will make an enormous amount of money with because it's Lego. And the companies also know that it's not going to encroach upon their own universes because it's also Lego and it's its own tone. So in this film, not only do we have all of the DC superheroes with Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, just in cameos, they're not really in it, but we've also got all of the villains, including Bane, and the person's doing an impression of Tom Hardy when he's doing that, you know.
But did DC make money then?
Yeah, of course, it's licensed out too. But it's also got Daleks from Doctor Who, it's got King Kong in it, it's got Sauron from Lord of the Rings.
Which is great, you've got all the best villains and the...
Yeah, it's got Voldemort. I mean, this is the point, is what they do is... Like they did in the Adam West Batman, rest in peace Adam West, in 66, I think it was, where he suddenly has to face all of the villains at the same time.
Oh yes, I remember that, yeah.
Well, they do that in the opening credits sequence, and so you go, well, where are they going to go now? Because that was very busy. Mm. And so the Joker tries to free the biggest villains from all universes, and that's the plot of it, basically.
Oh, great.
Which is why he brings in all of Voldemort. What's weird...
Who is the evilest villain? Can you say that?
The evilest is the Joker, so he's sort of weird, but then his sort of right-hand evil guys are Voldemort, and there's the witch from Wizard of Oz. And
I hate the fact that Voldemort's now...
Well, it's not, for kids. It's baddies they understand. The director tried... I did a bit of reading, and the director tried to get some baddies from 18-rated things.
I was going to say that. So, Freddy Krueger and Jason...
Well, not so much Forbes. Those. He wanted Kathy Bates from Misery.
Great!
But they didn't let him put them in. They didn't let him put them in.
What? Because Stephen King didn't let him?
No, I think it's because of just... I don't know.
Kathy Bates and Misery would have been
great. Oh. Would have been great. And I think that is a slight problem with it, is that it's just not quite as fun as it could have been.
I mean, it sounds absolutely brilliant.
Oh, for kids. It's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. And Will Arnett's Batman is the most, I think, true to Batman, in that he basically sounds like Donald Trump, in that he's a totally egotistical loner narcissist who thinks he's the best at everything and won't listen to anybody else. And it's very funny. Mm. You know, he's just very funny. And he accidentally, at a party because he's not listening, adopts a small boy. And that's where the story starts. And so the character stuff with Batman is really, really good. And of course, like with the previous Lego film, there's an enormous amount of sort of incredibly busy action sequences where you sort of struggle to keep up with what the hell is going on. But, you know, it's keeping up the quality if getting a little more conservative with the creativity, I'd say. It's a good fun movie. If you enjoyed the Lego movie, you will enjoy this.
How many Davids did you give it?
That's tricky, because I'm
not as good as the Lego movie then.
I didn't enjoy the Lego movie that much. I found I didn't. I enjoyed bits of it, but I found it a bit... bit by the numbers, but... Not that
you like superhero movies,
but it's about the journey. It's not if you find yourself thinking about the numbers whilst you're watching it, something's they're not playing it right. They're playing lip service.
What about all the superhero films?
Yeah, because I like the physical choreography of fights. When it's animation, it's meaningless for me.
But the normal choreography of people fighting is meaningless in these days.
What do you mean by that?
It's just nonsense in superhero films.
In what sense?
There's someone literally jumping on a bouncing off the back of a swan and kid doing a flying kick.
Well, yeah, I don't like that stuff. It's the ones when it's stuff
that's
the arsehole
dogs, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the arsehole dogs next door, I'm afraid. Arsehole dog fans. yeah, so, no, it's just all big. I don't like gods flying through the air punching each other. I like actual fight choreography that, you know, involves gravity in some way, and an actual person doing it, you know? So yeah, I know what you're saying. I just, there's something in the animation that I don't know. Every beat was hit so sort of on time and exactly as you'd expect that the story had nothing particularly to offer. You know, I still enjoyed it. It's very watchable, and there's some really good gags in there.
Mm.
I mean, it is another superhero film. Again, I think that is why I enjoyed the end of Lego Movie so much, is that it changes what it's doing. I can't
remember what happened.
Well, it breaks out in... spoilers, guys, if you've not seen it, but I think everyone saw it when it came out. It breaks out into live action in the final third.
Oh, yes.
Where you discover that Will Ferrell has been hiding the Lego from his... Is it his son or something?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So he is the bad guy, because he's been gluing the blocks together.
Oh, yes, of course. I remember.
So you can't play with them. And it doesn't have that sort of flair to it. It is just a sort of straight film of Lego Batman. But his version of the character, coming back to this, is the best that I've seen them do it. It is. Because Batman is severely mentally ill, and I've never seen any of the actors playing him sort of embody that particularly well.
Yeah, like, he's not addressed what he's doing. He's totally mental.
Mm. Like, he is a billionaire who could solve all of Gotham's problems by spending his money, but chooses instead to dress as a gimp and go out at night and punch
in
people.
A rubber suit. Yeah, yeah. Rather than actually maybe investing in the sort of social workers.
But is a plot point in this film.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's Rosario Dawson plays what's her name, Commissioner Gordon's daughter, and her thing is like, I've got a 4-point plan to clean up this city, which includes education and crime prevention and blah blah blah, because for all we keep celebrating Batman, he never actually catches them and puts them in prison. Like, they're always out there. Crime remains exactly the same as when he started.
What a prick Batman is.
Yeah, but that's sort of what the story is, and it's quite nice, you know. It actually does something with that story rather than just do 3 movies and then start over again, you know.
How many Davies did you give it then?
I think I'd give it 6.5.
Okay. Well, that's about it, isn't it, I reckon?
Yeah, that's probably it for this week. If you'd like to write in, then please do go to filmfandango.com and fill out the form there, and we will read out your letter on the programme. Also, we do this for free, so if you've enjoyed episodes in the past, then we would love it if you donated towards our running costs. So go to filmfandango.com, click the donate button, and anything you think this is worth? Is that a good way of putting it?
17 pence,
please. Just give us 17 pence.
Thank you for people who have donated.
Yeah, everyone in house, thank you very much.
Think about you.
Yeah. Keep watching the
films.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.